Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go in iTunes, there are like 100 podcasts now about ADHD. Seriously, do it. Look, you'll be shocked. And I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The CNADHD podcast is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
Welcome to another episode of CNADHD. I'm your host, Liz Lewis. You might have noticed that I no longer have episode numbers. That's because I can't keep track of the numbers and I say them wrong and I mix them up and it's just, I decided it was all too much. So I'm just not putting numbers on these anymore. I hope you don't mind. Today's guest is Shel Mendelson. I first heard her speak on Lori Dupar's Telesummit, which reminds me, I need to email Lori Dupar. I would like to talk to her as well. And Shel is an ADHD career coach. I really liked what I heard. I asked her to be on the show. We worked it out in our schedule, and she agreed. So this is a pretty wide-ranging interview, but I think it's really good for those of us to hear. You know, making it on the job, finding the career path that works for you. These are questions I get all the time, and I don't always have really good answers. So grab your favorite beverage and listen in as Shel Mendelson and I discuss making it on the job and in your career with ADHD.
Welcome to the show, Shel Mendelson. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, I first saw you on Lori Dupar's Telesummit, and I was like, oh, I'm going to fire off a quick email to her. And it's the funniest thing because that was like maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And now I don't remember what all like the inspiration was in my head because that's how I am. I want to start. Could you tell me, I ask everybody this question, could you tell me your ADHD story?
Okay. Well, clearly as we all are, for ADHD, it starts in childhood. However, with me, I went through all of the trials and tribulations and frustrations of having ADHD, inattentive, by the way, until 10 years ago. And without divulging my true age at this point, which I refuse to do, I realized after going to, when it really hit me that there was something that I needed to really look at that was impacting my life, and it had been impacting my life. It's kind of like, you know, you have to hit rock bottom till that happens. And for me, it was essentially the demise for me of a franchise system that I had created. And I had spent the previous 14 years not only creating, starting, founding, but developing over the years, pulling all of the professionals together, and we were fairly successful. And throughout that time, I realized that I was different from everyone else, and I was being called on the carpet by my partners, my business partners, and it just deteriorated. Probably over the past, in the last 2 or 3 years, they really deteriorated, including a divorce, which happens a lot, and everything else that comes along with that, where you end up hitting rock bottom, right? Yep. And I remember 2 years before that, a friend of mine who's a therapist had sent me a book on ADD. And I remember looking at it and just literally laughing to myself and saying, give me a break. You know, I absolutely refused to look at it. But somehow I kept that book. And when I hit that rock bottom position, I literally crawled over to the bookshelf and pulled it off the shelf. I didn't know where it was, but my hand went right there and pulled it off. I started reading, and that's when it began. That's when I realized, as many people experience for the first time, of recognizing that you're not alone, that this is a thing. And all the characteristics were there. Of course, you do the checklist. And then I went and had a formal diagnosis. And it was all, you know, happy, sad, every emotion in the book. So it took me a while to sort of process all that. But when I finally recognized what was going on and that everything, you know, of course, you do a replay of your life, unless you're a child starting out with it. But I did a replay of my life, and every single situation explained, my diagnosis explained literally every situation I was in. And I laugh about this now, but in my 20s, I was fired from 20 secretarial jobs. 15 or 20, I don't know exactly. I say 20, maybe just to exaggerate a little bit. But I just laugh about that now because I think, well, I was so rebellious. I thought I was better than everyone. I had the skills. I had all of that. But my attitude basically sucked. And I couldn't figure out, my self-esteem plummeted from that until I finally got into my master's program in counseling. And once I did that, my professional career started. I was a late bloomer, like a lot of us are, by the way. I was a late bloomer and started my career at 32. And it took off. I became a superstar because I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. And that's when I realized that, oh my gosh, there are people like me who go through the same kinds of things because they're in the wrong job. So I took that experience and I started identifying another target market of working with my tribe, our tribe, mm-hmm. of ADHD adults. And I've been doing that for 10 years and it's given me more satisfaction and has been more fun than anything you can possibly imagine. And I just keep growing in it and want to do more. And I just want to help us as a tribe to understand how important it is to find the work that makes your heart sing in some way. And I know that sounds corny. I know it sounds Pollyanna, but there are ways to do it. And I believe that that's what in the work that I do actually helps people to do that. And it's not a quick fix. And that's the thing that I always tell people. Nothing is a quick fix, especially with ADHD. It's based on repetition of information. You got to hear it how many times?
A lot. I'm just smiling because everything you're saying, I'm like, I'm not going to tell her my career background.
Yeah, right.
And I'm also not going to tell her that, you know, this is like probably my third career, I would say. I'm 40. I'll just say how old I am. I don't care.
Right.
And this is basically my third, I don't know, I'd have to count, third or fourth career.
Right.
And yeah, like you are absolutely right. The thing with ADHD is if we don't love it, if it's not something that really lights you up, it's probably not going to last, even if you like it in the moment.
No, it's not going to last because liking it in the moment is, mm-hmm. that's what happened. What I realized about the franchise system I created was, and I can talk a little bit about this at some point, which is my definition of mission versus life purpose. A mission is a project that you get excited about and inspired about, and it can take you off track for a while, which is what I realized the franchise system was. But it wasn't my life's work or life's purpose for that matter. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I wish I like met you 2 years ago or something, because I should have met you 2 years ago, because it really seems to me like you would be great to talk to for someone who is maybe transitioning or making a major shift in their career. Because I think a lot of, even the women in my community, I mean, there's all different types of transitions happening, but a lot of us, you know, maybe we had a career and then we had kids and then it became a, how do I go back to work? And what do I do?
Right.
And I've hit a lot of, you know, setbacks. Over the years. So yeah, totally. So how are you getting your clients now? Where are they coming to you from and what are they looking for when they get to you?
I'm everywhere. Kind of, I'm on, if you do a Google search, excuse me, I'm there. Of course, you know, client referrals, obviously. And then the summits, I do quite a few interviews. I'm doing another one in a couple of weeks. Those I make sure to do as many as I can, because it's the only way really to get the word out, not just about me, but about the necessity for doing the kind of work, even if it's not with me. Okay. And truly, I want our tribe to thrive. I want us to thrive in the work we do and find the work that lights us up. I'll talk more about that in a bit, but
well, that's a good transition. How does someone go about finding meaningful work, their life's work?
Well, I think this is really tough for me to say without sounding salesy, but the parachute method that I use is really the way to do it. And there's a lot of reasons why it works. And I'll just give you a little bit of a history on this. Richard Bowles, who was my mentor and the writer of What Color Is Your Parachute? He wrote this, the first edition, 45 years ago, probably. And he wrote an edition every year following that. And I finally realized that I wanted to get his training. There was something about it. And it was before I was diagnosed. There was just something about parachute that I resonated with. And now that after my diagnosis, it made perfect sense. It's got the structure needed that we all need, which something like ADHD coaching provides, right? And it basically requires, I'll say forces you, to really look at what your preferences are without editing yourself. So I heard, you know, where people talk about how they how the voices in their head tell them one thing. It's usually a lot of times it's coming from somewhere else. Their voices from parents or friends or whatever.
Yes.
What happens is that when we edit ourselves, it's usually an edit coming from somewhere else. And Bowles calls that the safekeeping self. Why would I even think of that? I can't get a job in that. There's not even a major in that. There's no way I can do that. What would other people think of me if I did that thing that I've dreamed about doing my entire life? Or you can imagine all what the little guy on the shoulders is telling you over and over and over again. You can't, you can't, you can't, shoulda, woulda, coulda. And in this process, that little voice is dimmed, because it requires that you get down and dirty, literally, with what it is that is most important to you in every single area of what makes up your ideal work. And that includes the areas are, and I talk about this a lot, by the way, the skills that you want to use and prefer to use, the people that you want to work with, the people you want to work for, the people you want to serve. What working conditions are truly important to you to thrive in the work that you do? Again, unedited. That means if you're working for somebody now who doesn't allow you bathroom breaks or doesn't allow you to get up and move around when you need to, or use headphones or use whatever is necessary for you to be as productive as you can, or to just be happy where you are. And that includes what it feels like when you walk into the building, how many windows there are. I mean, the working conditions for people with ADHD and all of our sensitivities are critical. And so it's really important to identify all of that. So what I do in each area, and another area that, of course, they're all important, but one that's really important are the fields, Bowles calls it the fields of fascination. So for me, I'm in a couple of fields. I'm in with the ADHD world, so there's a specialization there. I'm in the educational world, so there's a specialization there, and the counseling and coaching world. Okay, so there are different fields that we kind of mesh together. So identifying those fields and the skills that you want to work with the most are critical. And I don't allow my clients to doubt themselves when they come up with, we have different ways of getting at that information, and it's not just one size fits all, right? So we get at that information, and all, it's kind of like Blue's Clues, right? It's a big, you're putting all these clues together into a puzzle. And the puzzle also isn't just the only puzzle that you're going to be looking at any particular time. It may be good for a couple of years, and then it's going to transition into something else. So the groundwork is laid by doing the parachute method. And the reason I tell people the book, a lot of people have tried to use it and they end up calling me, because essentially it's meant to be done with a coach or a counselor or somebody.
Okay.
I'm both. It's a resource book. So to try and read it cover to cover can be extremely overwhelming. And some people get it, but it's not easy. Our tribe, probably not. Not so much.
Well, you are speaking my language here. Like, so, okay. I will say that, and it's not just women, I think in general, you were talking about, and I forget the word you used.
Safekeeping self?
Yes. Or like, okay, I'll give you an example here. Yeah. I have always known on some level what I should do, what I am good at, what I want to do. But I think at a very young age, it was like, shut down. Like, it was just right. Like, no, Elizabeth, like, you are flaky and you're not good at math. You can't possibly have a business, and you're very quiet. You can't be a leader.
Right.
You know? And so I think that those voices became my inner voice for a very long time. And so I took all these career paths, right, that like could sort of meet my needs. Mm-hmm. Sort of make my needs, like, or like a piece of it. The teaching, right, was a lot like being a leader and supporting other people and helping other people, but it wasn't my full capabilities. And so I think that that's common. I do. I just think it's really common. And I think it's really cool that you have a way of assessing like interests. And you said without like filters, like
without unedited.
Unedited. Like,
right. So I even if it sounds impossible,
yes.
Like I recently, I always use this as an example, but I recently just started working with a client who actually had this thought when, or had this about questions I asked in the very beginning, is when you were 7 or 8 years old, what was the thing that you loved to play? What did you want to be when you grew up? Or what did you tell yourself you wanted to be? Or if you didn't tell yourself that, what were the things that you were drawn to at that time in your life? And I always was looking for somebody to say a rock star. Well, I had somebody actually say a rock star. And this is an IT guy, by the way. An IT guy who has been playing drums with a group his whole life, but didn't even mention anything about using that skill. And let me say something about skills. You mentioned teaching. Teaching is a skill, right? So identifying the skills you love to use doesn't mean that being a teacher is going into a public, as many people think, I've got to get a teaching credential now and I've got to go into a public school setting and teach K through 12, or I'm not a teacher. That's not true. The skill of teaching is used in many, many ways. So even though you may have thought about doing certain things when you were very young, whatever it is that you were drawn to at that time plays itself out in some way, shape, or form throughout your entire life. And in some way needs to be incorporated in your life's work. It becomes a clue as to what your future for the rest of your life literally is going to be in terms of the work work you do if you want to feel good about what you're doing and successful. And feeling good for people with ADHD, by the way, goes hand in hand with being successful at it, quote unquote. So I always tell people, if you're not enjoying the work you're in right now, which what percentage do you imagine the population of the world is that don't enjoy the work they're going to, that literally live for Fridays and hate Mondays? I don't think any of that is stopped. I think that continues on and on and on. But if you're living in that world and you haven't identified what it is you like to do and you're dreading it, how do you think that's impacting your workplace? How do you think it's impacting the people you work for? And for people with ADHD, we're literally at risk because we're probably getting called on the carpet. We're probably getting people talking behind our backs. We're probably alienating our coworkers. Or we're just getting sick, or something's happening that's going to create the downfall of that job. Whether it's you get fired, you quit, you whatever. I mean, you maybe can pull it off for a year, maybe two. But after that, let's face it.
Well, the other side of the coin, and this was me, is I never got myself fired. Mm-hmm. But how do I explain it? I became almost hypervigilant. Like, mm-hmm. I made myself exhausted trying to overplan, overthink, like, because I was teaching, I was doing curriculum stuff, and like, I was so hypervigilant that I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't eat. I was like, so, and it went on for years. You know,
it impacted your life outside of your job. And it probably impacted your job to some degree, because maybe the kids saw a teacher who was a little bit tired or not quite. You don't know what went on in their minds or in the minds of the other teachers or your principal or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's no hiding it with us, because we tend to wear our stuff on our sleeve, right? Mm-hmm. There's not really any hiding from it. So this, I think, is a good thing, by the way. I think this is a good thing, because this is why we get wake-up calls sooner. It's how we shift and change a lot easier, I think, than people without ADHD who maybe could put up with it because they've got the family and the mortgage and the blah, blah, blah. And they say, okay, stiff upper lip kind of thing. We're going to keep going for the next 30 years until I get my golden parachute or whatever.
So what does somebody do, though, if they're in the middle of that? Like, and I do talk to a lot of people like this who maybe you've been in your job for 10 years or something, and you're good at what you do. You don't love all of your coworkers and the company culture necessarily if you work for someone else. And you know that there's something else you would like to pursue, but you've got children and a mortgage and college loans and all of those things. Like, how does one with ADHD who already gets overloaded, right? How does someone, I don't know, take steps toward finding the path?
Well, hopefully you've started taking the steps quite a bit before that, but you're talking about a ticking time bomb right now. That's a situation where people are, and with ADD and the overwhelm, it's only a matter of time. I talked about, in Lori's telesummit, I talked about self-accommodation, which is a term I kind of made up. And in the self-accommodation, I didn't talk about, or I specifically said, you don't have to hide your ADHD. Just don't make it. I think there are ways to self-accommodate before you get to that point. And that's what I was trying to provide, was a little bit of relief. And also, in addition to that, starting to take the steps to understand what direction you really want to go in. That's the first step. And that in and of itself provides a great deal of relief, knowing that you're at least moving in another direction and you're starting to explore other things and you're finally getting a grip on what it is that you're supposed to be doing. And the steps to doing that become very clear after a period of time. It might be something very simple, like taking an online course or talking to somebody who's doing something that might seem kind of cool that you want to check out. There's so many different steps that you can take before you get to that point. I always tell people, don't quit your job. That's crazy. But let's see how we can make it tolerable, you know, and make it doable so that you can move through it and get to where you need to be so that your confidence is there in making that shift. And confidence, by the way, is everything.
Yeah.
Confidence is everything.
Oh, we all need more of that.
Right. And if you're not confident and shaky about it, don't do it. I would never tell somebody to leave their work, because that will leave you even more devastated if you do that. So that's why it's important to start some process of identifying where you need to go well before it gets to that point. And in doing so, it makes whatever you're doing a means to an end job versus the end.
Okay.
A means to an end job. Anyone listening to this, you can identify right now if you're in a means to an end job. You know it's not the job that you really want to be doing, but it's getting the bills paid. It's getting whatever done that needs to get done. It's giving you a place to go. Maybe it gives you some social interaction. For some people, it actually gets you away from screaming kids. If you're a guy, that's so sexist. Did I say that? I mean, for men and women, you know, work is a lot easier for a lot of us than to parent. Being a stay-at-home parent, and I've been one, by the way, is the hardest job in the world. And I never could do it without doing some work. I mean, I just had to do some work because I love my work, so I was lucky that way. And I want everybody to experience what it feels like to love what you're doing so you can be flexible with it and incorporate it into whatever situation that you're in. And for me, I was determined not to work for anyone else. I just got to that point where I couldn't work for other people. And that's may not be true of a lot of people, especially when you're young. I think it's important to work for other people for a while to just get your legs and get some experience of interacting and dealing with a work situation like that. And just learning the tools of the trade, basically. But ultimately, I realized I couldn't work for other people. So I was scrappy, and as we are, we're very resourceful and we're creative, and we come up with ways to figure out how we can do it on our own, do what we want to do, right? So I was always working a little bit while I was at home with my son.
I was the same way. I worked for other people, and then I had my son, and then I realized I needed to do something else for myself.
Right.
And then I decided I was going to be a work at home mom. And that's hard too. It's really, really hard. But I will tell you that I'm not that scrappy.
You would be surprised. I don't believe you one little bit.
Well, you know, I'm a person. Think of it like this, Shell. I'm the person who started a website and started doing my own research and producing content. But I did it very much because I could hide behind a computer screen. You know,
that's scrappy.
Okay. I thought it was hiding, but okay.
It's a little hiding, but it's very scrappy too, because you're doing it your way.
I'm trying, but I learned real quick that if I was going to hide, you know, that I had to be seen sometimes. Like if I was going to ever actually make any money, I was going to have to be seen. And that's one of the issues for me. And I don't know if it's all ADHDers. I sometimes feel like I need to prove my value. Like if I'm, you know, living here and I'm a stay-at-home, work-at-home mom, you know, I feel like I should produce something to prove what I'm, you know, what I'm doing. I don't know if that's a common thing or not, but for me.
Okay. Stop right there. Can I be your coach for a second?
Well, sure.
Okay. I'm going to tell you this. I looked at your website. I flipped around it. It's extremely well-crafted. It's one of the better ones. I even used one of the links to one of your articles on my Facebook page. I was so impressed with your site and what you're doing. And I think you need to hear more about how important the work you're doing is. And it looks to me like you could have been working for a Fortune 500 company, really, because you, it's so professional looking, and the way you approach things clearly are well thought out. They don't appear to be random. And I would go to your website. I would use your website as a go-to, especially for the podcasts, because I like the way you interview. I like the questions you ask. I like the way you interact. You're a great interviewer, and I wrote you that already.
Thank you.
Right. So I would just say, picture yourself now and accept yourself as already being someone who's contributing a great deal. I don't know if that's coaching. Is that coaching for you?
Probably. Yeah.
Because the assignment I would give you would be to look at your website from pretend that you're somebody just looking at it very indiscriminately or discriminately, like you're looking for a good website from a neutral position. Okay. As if you're me or one of your subscribers or somebody who's thinking about being a subscriber.
Yeah.
And would you subscribe to this? And if yes, be honest with yourself. This is where the honesty comes in. And if you would say, if you start picking yourself apart about it, just notice that that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, why am I picking myself apart about this? What is it? Whose voice is that?
I don't know whose voice that is. That's a good question. I'm not sure.
It's not yours. I can guarantee you.
Okay. Okay.
No, I can guarantee you it's not yours.
Well, like I said, you're totally speaking my language, and I like this self-accommodation thing. And I really, really like the means to an end job, because I've had a lot of people, funny enough, I've had a lot of people tell me they want to do what I do. And I always tell them, I'm like, and they complain about their day job, whatever that may be. And I'm always like, well, that day job will support, you know, you learning how to be a blogger, if that's what you're trying to do. You know, it will support that. So,
well, it's very clear that you didn't arrive at that just randomly. It's clear to me that a lot of thought went into it. And and I know what it takes to make decisions like that and to become successful with ADHD. I know that it means that you have had to really suss things out for yourself and clear the way to make it happen, which means you had to jump through a few hoops, but they were hoops you wanted to jump through.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't things, and I love, I've adopted the I don't want to stage in my life. Like, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to do it. If I need to do it, I'll do it right now, this second. I'm not going to put it off.
Yeah.
If I absolutely need to do it, it's something that needs to get done. But if I don't want to do it and it's not a make or break situation, then I am not going to do it. So the one thing that the process that I do when people go through it with me is they get to know, do I want to do this? Yes. Or do I not want to do this? Hard no. It becomes very black and white. So it makes it very easy to identify employers that you want to work for, because you've done the work and asked the questions that you need to ask, because you've identified your preferences. Hard yes, hard no. You walk into an interview, you're there for a very specific purpose. And that purpose shows all over in your posture, how you carry yourself, the questions you ask. You're not a job beggar. You're the one who's interviewing them, because this is the work, the time that you're going to be spending however many hours a week doing. And you know that if it's not the right fit, because you've already experienced that, you've gone through a process of identifying all these things, that you're just setting yourself up.
Well, I was going to ask you that, actually. Like, I know that if we've experienced a lot of roadblocks, failures with jobs in the past, it's hard to go into an interview.
It is. But when you've got interestingly enough, this process provides a lot of opportunities for people. What happens is they start recognizing opportunities that come up that fit them, and they start meeting people that they connect with. Mm. And I don't believe in the Indeed, you know, Glassdoor, submit a million resumes, get absolutely no response and be frustrated. I don't believe in that process. This is very much the backdoor process, but it's the process that works, because the only thing that works is that you are loving it. And that's what shows, and that's what gets you hired. That's what gets you connected. It takes you from the floor. And I've worked with people who've come to me fired, downtrodden, feeling at their very lowest. And step by step, we go through this, and all of a sudden they're getting like 4 or 5 offers for jobs, and they get to pick, and they know what not to pick. Right.
I was going to say, how do you know if you have options? How do you narrow it down?
You go through, you have your foundation, you have your, it's called in Parachute, it's called the flower. And all the petals of the flower represent different aspects of what make up your ideal work. And so you have that in front of you at all times. And does it match up? It becomes very black or white, yes or no. And it's easy for some people. It's not always easy to say no to something that's going to pay you a lot of money and offer all the benefits and blah, blah, blah. But it behooves you not to say no when you know that it's going to end up being the wrong fit. It's only going to take you down the wrong path again and lose all the confidence that you build up to that point, lost, or you have to start over. Not lost necessarily, just oops, you know, it could be as simple as an oops, that's it. But what happens nowadays is a lot of people see a job description and it can be very detailed. You know how those job descriptions look. Here are all the tasks that you have to do, and you look at it and you go, oh, I can do about 60-70% of this, no problem. The rest of it, I'll just blow off, or I'll pretend like I can do it. Maybe 60 or 70% is good enough. And you might even get hired on that, but it's that other 30% that gets you, because it's what you really, either you haven't looked into it enough or know enough about it to realize that it's not something you really want to be doing. And yet you're ending up doing it a larger part of the day than you ever imagined. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So
yeah.
I have a question. Like, say you get a job that meets all the petals of the flower, or whether you're self-employed or whatever, if you find some work that is meaningful to you, like, okay, you know what I do. I create content and I advocate for ADHD and I am a community leader. So what are some of the roadblocks you see ADHDers run into? And then I'm going to see if they're the same as what I think.
The roadblocks? Well, for one thing, you've only identified 3 things that you are. And for one thing, you're an interviewer.
I didn't know that was a separate thing.
That's a skill, by the way. So for you, you need to look at the skills that you use in the work that you're doing now and expand on that idea. Okay. And there's way, I could talk forever about this. Don't get me started. But that's the premise, is that we see ourselves in such limited ways. And yet we are all, each one of us, an expanse of information and skills. And skills are not the same thing. When I talk about skills, I'm not talking about strengths. Because we all have strengths in a lot of areas. But that doesn't mean we should be using those strengths in the specific ones in the work we do if we don't love using them. And here's the thing. I mean, when I was doing secretarial work, I could type faster than anybody on the planet. And I did shorthand. And I knew all this stuff. But I hated doing it full time. On the other hand, I love using my keyboard and typing when I'm journaling or when I'm taking notes or when I, it's a skill that has taken me through the years, and I'm very happy that I have that skill, but I would not want to use it 85, 90% of the workday. Does that make sense? So it's a strength can, our strengths can actually be detrimental to us if somebody that you're working for sees that you have it, but you really don't enjoy using it, and then takes advantage of that situation. Mm-hmm. Oh, you love taking notes. You love typing. I don't know. Just think of all the possibilities. We've all run into this situation.
I can tell you that just as like a content creator, I have, I'm not going to say like Pete, I put myself in a position to give away too much, like to give too much of myself away for nothing, because that's how I am. And so that is like a skill. Like I can feel, I don't know if I'm have an empathic thing going on or what, but I can feel what people need from me and I can try to put them at ease, but I've given too much of myself away for free and I've gotten burned a lot. That way.
You and me both. I've had that situation. I think most of us, if you're being honest with yourself as a professional in the ADHD world, we've all done that. Probably way more than we like to imagine that we have. And certainly I have. I can tell you just recently a situation that happened where I just could feel that I was giving to, you know, you almost feel like the, you know, when the tipping point is.
Yes.
Like you need to say stop at this point, but you just don't, because it feels good to do it. If you're using a skill you enjoy using, right? You're having fun. If you're honest with yourself, you're giving it away, but it's fun. And that's kind of how I look at it now. It's like, how did that feel for you to have this conversation? Well, it felt pretty good. You know, so, okay, I'm not getting paid for it, but so here are the things that I am going to get paid for, and I have to watch out for that. And when for look for people are going to be taking advantage of me, you can sort of intuit that one too, right? One of the gifts that we have, many of us, are what I call the 360-degree viewpoint, where we can see things in the big picture format, right? We can see things, and this is what happened to me as CEO of my franchise system. I could see situations 2 years down the road that were going to happen if we didn't do something to come together and take care of it. And I got literally slogged on for doing that. I mean, put down like, what are you talking about? We have to do this. We have to do that. All these detail-y things, but no planning, no seeing what needs to get done in the future and coming together to talk about it. So I was working with I wasn't working with the right people in that situation. I was very unhappy. I created the franchise, but it got to the point where I felt like a prisoner in my own company. And it was like working in the corporate world for me because I had created a corporate situation. And then I was doing this day-to-day work that I hated. It was took me so far away from the work that I love, which is the work I do now. And to the point where I was just craving to have a client, you know. Mm-hmm. And so busy every day, I couldn't even think about it. But I knew that that's what I was craving. So I don't know if that explains a little bit about what happens with when people start inaccurately. I'm not saying this is a negative for you, but I just want you to see it for what it is. You're basically giving yourself away, but you're going to know next time, you're going to have a better feel for when you think somebody might be taking advantage of you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they are, and they don't even realize it because they like talking to you so much.
Right.
But they could be vampire-ish, if you know what I mean. They could be energy vampires.
Well, that's one of my things, right? Like people reach out to me because I do appear on social media. People reach out to me and they engage in like back and forth. And mm-hmm. while I enjoy those interactions, I have come to understand that they're not doing it intentionally. It's not nefarious. but they are basically getting like free support and picking my brain. And I have had to learn the hard way. And then I'll tell you what, though, and I don't know if you experienced this, maybe you did with your business, when you start to create boundaries for yourself around that, people don't always like it.
Oh, no. Oh, no, they don't like it.
No.
They don't like it. But here's the good news about that. That's a good, clear sign that those are people that you probably should spend less time with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Or in my case, I've actually cut out.
I shut down a whole Facebook group. I just archived it, shut it down, because I had been giving my time and knowledge and heart and soul to these almost 2,000 people. And they treated me like dirt when I decided to move private and charge a low monthly fee. They were very nasty with me. And I was kind of like, all right. And then one day I just made the decision that I had to just archive it.
Mm-hmm.
And people told me I was crazy. Like, how can you just write off 2,000 people? And I was like, they want, you know, whatever's being offered for free. So let someone else do that.
Yeah. There's a Facebook group. I don't know if you know Stacey Turris. Have you interviewed her?
I haven't interviewed her. I was in her group years ago. And then I guess, I'm only in two right now because one is run by my friend, Terry Matlin. And the other one is smaller. It's like 2,000 people. So I can tolerate that. It's when they get to like 10,000, 20,000 that I'm like out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you made the right choice for yourself, because when you can tell, and you know, I always tell people this is a feelings process. So even kind of through osmosis, you learn how to deal with your feelings and express yourself. You start realizing that when stuff doesn't feel good, it's not working.
Yeah.
When clearly you're not having fun anymore. And it's not that you have to have fun all the time, but when it's sustained over a period of time that you're not having fun and you're not looking forward to it and you're not excited anymore and you don't have those warm feelings about it, it's time to make a change. And some of us allow that to go on for way too long.
I think when people think it's their livelihood, if you're talking about a job situation, there's a lot of fear. When it's your livelihood, when you feel like it's your business, if you're self-employed, depends on it, that's
what I found is that, and now I'm pretty picky about even the clients that I work with, because I realize that this is a relationship we're creating and I need to look forward to talking to these people and really feel like they're getting it and they're moving forward. And if I sense that that's not going to happen, I hear a lot of yes buts, or I hear a lot of stuff that maybe needs to get done before they come to me. Like sometimes they need to get a therapist before they come to me. Sometimes they even need to have an ADHD coach specifically, just for life, or a life coach or something, an ADHD life coach. And I always tell them, if you're going to get a therapist, make sure they are ADHD specialized in some way. That doesn't mean they have to have, it's better if they're diagnosed with the, they're diagnosed plus they have the experience and the licensing and all that, or that they have worked with somebody very closely, like they have a child with ADHD or a husband or a spouse with ADHD. So they've lived with it to some degree and they understand it on a very personal level. Enough people have said to me, yeah, I've done it the other way and it hasn't worked. So I always say, look, if you're going to do that, make sure you find the people that do that. And I think there are a few people in our community who work by phone, because if it's not local, they need to work with somebody by phone.
Yeah.
Sometimes I ask them to clean it up a little bit that way, in the sense that they have a few ducks in the row before we start working together. And I do tell them that what I do is primarily career focused. And then as we're going through it, a little ADHD coaching for accountability or whatever comes into it. And then as we're going through it and the fears and all that, the obstacles come up, that's when the life coaching, and I use my tools. And I use I use a tool called the Peace Process, which was developed by Christian Michelson, who's a big coach in the field of coaching. I don't know. He's one of the big ones. And I love this process because it helps people move through these feelings pretty quickly. And sometimes we do it together, and sometimes I just make sure that they're doing it in the workplace or whenever they need to do it, and they report back to me that they've done it. Because it always gets them to neutral. It gets them to a place where they can start, the clouds start clearing, and they can just make a educated decision.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds to me like, I mean, you have a whole process, your parachute process, and then you can give them a little built-in accountability as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There has to be accountability. And sometimes I understand people are working. So a lot of times some people aren't, but most people do have jobs when we're working together. So I know that if they have a family, there's limited time. So I always make sure that they are honest with me about what they can actually get done. And that I don't, you know, obviously I don't grade what they do. This is their process. They have to make it their own. And they have to own it, really own it. And the whole thing is about owning who you are. It really does. So you want to find out who you are, go through this process. You'll find out really pretty quickly within a very short period of time who you are.
Well, that's amazing.
Really.
There's a lot of people, ADHD or not, that need probably to go through a process like this, I would guess.
Well, and certainly, you know, I work with all age groups. But I'll tell you how it generally works. With the younger ones, and I work with college graduates quite a bit, who are completely like, what the hell do I do now? And now I owe like a gazillion dollars, so their parents pay for it. Those people are the easiest to work with in terms of, when I say easiest, I mean they move through it fairly quickly because they don't have as much baggage, right? They don't have all the work, all the voices of, you screwed up on the job, you know, whatever the voices are, they don't have all of that. From years, they don't have the baggage. And the older they get, the more baggage they collect. So by the time I have somebody say in their 60s, mid-60s, you can imagine a little bit of a process. And repetition comes in handy. And my particular form of cheerleading comes in handy. They really need to hear this stuff over and over and over again. It takes longer.
Oh, I haven't edited it, but I recorded a whole podcast about even forming routines and tiny, tiny habits. It takes people with ADHD a lot more repetition.
A lot. And very true in this process as well, because the same old stuff is going to come up. Like, well, but they have to keep seeing it over and over again. Then they have to start seeing where the light starts shining in. And it does start shining in when they start getting clearer and clearer and clearer about what direction to take. And that's where confidence starts to build. When the direction becomes like, you cannot argue with it anymore. And we do a thing where we go over the budget. So we make sure that whatever you're going into or transitioning into has to meet the minimum, whatever the minimum amount that you can have to live on is. And it has to be reasonable. You have to really go through all your expenses and say clearly and honestly, I have these expenses and even the ones that are important to you, like getting coffee or whatever, getting a lot, you know, the latte thing. Somebody who wasn't that tried to make us feel guilty for getting lattes. There was somebody who said, if you just put that money into an account, well, can you imagine? No, you have to build that into your budget. Okay. Yeah. And the thing is, that when you do that, it's like lifting, that lifts a lot off of the shoulders as well. Just knowing that here's what I need to make. So I'm not going to apply for jobs that don't, you know, have that, or unless I want to work another job, or unless I can figure out how to bring in enough money to make up the difference, mm-hmm. you know? So when people are moving into a new career, what I say is it doesn't have to be 100% of what you're doing. But even 60 to 70% of that is going to make a huge difference in your life.
Yeah.
Right? So you just look at, am I doing 60 to 70%? Well, now I'm doing about 5% maybe. if I'm lucky, on a good day.
For people to go through this process with you, and I consider it a process.
It is a process.
Your Shell's process. Do you have a name for it? Maybe you already told me.
All right. Well, the name of my company is Career Coaching with Shell.
Okay. Do you do this one-on-one, or do you have other options for people?
I primarily now work one-on-one, but I am in the process of creating an online parachute group where we go through the entire flower and we start to look at options in that group. It's a very small group of no more than 8 people, and it'll be on Zoom. So it's much more affordable overall. Because my rates are going up, by the way. I finally got the nerve to raise them, and I'm raising them.
Well, I always tell people, if you're going to get one-on-one support from somebody,
yeah,
you're going to pay for it. If you want somebody good, you're going to pay for it.
You're going to pay for it. And I tell them pretty much approximately, I have a 6-month minimum, by the way.
Yeah. Well, okay. when will your group program be available, you think?
Well, I have one tentatively scheduled for mid-September.
Okay.
I may switch that. I need to get enough people in it. Honestly, I need to get enough people in it for it to go. So they have to be flexible in terms of start dates to make sure I get enough people.
Do you have like an info page that people could be directed to for that?
I have. What they can do is they can, right now, I haven't put it up yet, but they can, I have it, and I'll send it to them in PDF, essentially. If they want to email me at shell.mendelson@gmail.com, they can do that, and I will be happy to send them the coaching write-up on that.
Okay.
And I'll be happy, usually, and I'm interviewing for that. People have to be interviewed to be in it, because I want to talk to everybody, because usually they're going to have questions and I can't answer every single question. And it's a small enough group that I can interview people. It's only 8 people. Right?
All right. Where else can people find you? What's your website called again?
My website is shellmendelson.com. And I'm also on Facebook, which is Career Coaching with Shell. I am on Twitter, but I don't do a lot on Twitter. I mainly do my Facebook website.
Okay.
For what I do, I haven't found it that helpful. I don't really like it. I'm not an Instagram person, okay?
yeah, Facebook's tough.
The website gives you a little bit of information about what I do, and so you get a feel for who I am. But the main thing is to call me if you want to talk to me.
Okay.
I mean, I prefer to talk to people and get to know what their needs are and determine if what I do is a good fit for them and vice versa. I mean, it just, you have to interview your coaches. You have to.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think a lot of people just, I don't know, they like the way somebody looks or they like their funny posts. And they just hand over their credit card, which is crazy. So
No. I don't want anyone to do that.
So thank you so much for answering these questions.
You're very welcome. I just want to say thank you. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Like I said, you're a great interviewer, and I just want to support you and continue to do what you do and what you love, because you're making a difference for a lot of people, right? And I love what I do. I want the same for everybody, especially in our tribe, because I know how critical it is to love what we do. It's a must. So thank you so much. I appreciate the conversation.
Well, thank you. And thank you. You've been so nice and complimentary, and you've given me so much to think about. All of us, so much to think about.
Thank you.
As you can tell, this was a really fun conversation to have, and we covered a lot of different things, from interviewing, figuring out what your skills are and if you actually want to use them, being really discerning, all of that good stuff. And I totally got coached sort of during this interview. which was awesome. I invite you all, I will put the links to Shell in the write-up of this episode, and I invite you all to contact her. She really is insightful, and I found her energy very calming and soothing, and I don't know. I'm sure you heard me talk about it during this episode, but I run a private membership for women. It's called the ADHD Enclave. I will link to it in the show notes. Next week, I have, it's going to be a really fun guest. Well, I have two guests, the Hubs and Ari Tuckman. We are going to talk about ADHD After Dark, his new book, and, you know, my sex life. So if you're down with that, make sure you listen to that episode too. Join the Enclave. It's a good time. And like I always say, we are stronger together.